Welcome to Christchurch Manchester Sermon Podcast. CCM is one church that meets every Sunday in various locations across Manchester. For more information about who we are or about our Sunday meetings, please visit www.christchurchmanchester.com.
My home is not on this earth, not in this world.
Okay, Mark 2, 23. So, one Sabbath, this is Jesus, was going through the grain fields. And as they made their way, his disciples began to pluck heads of grain. And the Pharisees were saying to him, "Look, why are they doing what is not lawful on the Sabbath?" And he said to them, "Have you ever read what David did when he was in need and was hungry? He and those who were with him, how he entered the house of God in the time of Abiathar the high priest, and ate the bread of the presence, which is not lawful for any but the priest to eat, and also gave it to those who were with him. And he said to them, 'The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord, even of the Sabbath.'" And then we go into chapter 3 in verse 1. "Again, he entered the synagogue, and a man was there with a withered hand, and they watched Jesus to see whether he would heal him on the Sabbath." That's all right. Okay, he sounded better than me. Okay, "and they watched Jesus to see whether he would heal them on the Sabbath so that they might accuse him. And he said to the man with the withered hands, 'Come here.' And he said to them, 'Is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do harm, to save or to kill?' But they were silent. And he looked around at them with anger, grieved at their hardness of heart, and said to the man, 'Stretch out your hands.' And he stretched it out, and his hand was restored. The Pharisees went out, immediately held counsel with the Herodians against him, how to destroy him." So these are two just brilliant stories, actually, super helpful stories that Mark has given us. And what hangs over these stories, for me, as we read them, is a simple question. And it's just the question we're going to look at this morning. So I think Jesus poses this question, and as Mark writes this to his readers, which includes us, he also asks this question of us as well. And the question is this: what sort of faith do you have? What sort of faith do you have? Does your faith bring life? Does your faith bring death? And really, it gets to the heart, the very heart of actually what Jesus is trying to teach us, what he is looking for in his disciples, what he's looking for in people that follow him. So when we read the Bible, when we read it together on a Sunday, when you read it perhaps in your family and or in your community group, or maybe on your own in the week, whenever you read it, you need to come to it with some honesty, really. You need to think honestly how the Bible is speaking to you. And sometimes we can go at the Bible with some false humility. So we just think we're wrong about everything all the time, and we don't allow God to encourage us, and we just are condemned, which isn't helpful. But sometimes you can go at the Bible with a stubborn pride where it speaks to you, but you don't allow it. You don't allow the Holy Spirit to prompt you. And so we want to approach this today with some honesty. And it's important that we do that and allow just the Holy Spirit to prompt you as you read. The main way, really, that God would speak to us actually is through his word, through his Bible. It's all there written for us. So let's allow the Holy Spirit just to nudge us this morning as we read. And this story, actually, it's important that we say that, because there are some very profound challenges for us in here around this question: what sort of faith do you have? So to understand this a little bit, let's do some backstory on Sabbath. Because moderns perhaps don't understand how Sabbath in the way that the Jewish people understood it. For them, it was a huge deal, really very, very important part of their life and their faith. And we perhaps don't think about it in those ways. Actually, I remember when I was a kid, Sunday was still a thing where all the shops shut, and there was a whole campaign about keep Sunday special and not allowing the shops to open and all of that. But actually, that's all gone now. You can shop as much on a Sunday just off your mobile phone as you can and any other day of the week. The idea of Sabbath has drifted out of our culture. So it's important that we just take a step back and think about it a little bit. So what is the huge deal? Why were the Pharisees freaking out as much as they were? Well, actually, Sabbath is part of our, it's part of their, the Jewish people, it's part of their creation story. So for them, God worked very hard for 6 days, and then on the seventh day, he had a day off. He took a Sabbath day off. And that was very important. And he blessed that day. So not, it wasn't like he just sat back and watched Netflix. Actually, he said, this is a holy day now. I have a day off. It is blessed. It is holy. And holy means it is set apart. So I remove this day from the other days because it is completely different. It points to me. It is a powerful time. So God made a period of time holy. Okay, now just think about that for a moment. Most world religions today, places are holy. Think about temples that are holy. Maybe even for the Islam religion, they would go to Mecca, which is a very holy place. For the Jewish people as well, actually going to the temple, that was a holy place as well. But not only that, God made time holy, which is important. God made a period of time very holy. And it's a huge clue in the creation story from God to us, where he says, look, I've worked hard for 6 days. I'm God of the entire universe, in charge of everything. I hold everything in my hand, and I quite like to have a day off. Okay, it's a huge clue. This is how creation is meant to work. And this was done in perfection. We sometimes think that work is as a result of the fall, because that's what it can feel like sometimes on a Monday morning. But actually, we are meant to work. We're meant to be like God, and we are also meant to rest. Humans flourish when they work well and when they rest well. We didn't get the hint, though, from it. And actually, he comes back to us again in Exodus, in the Ten Commandments. He gives these to Moses and says, look, this is how you guys are to live your lives. And one of the Ten Commandments was actually have a day off. There is a holy day. There is a Sabbath day. And actually, it's one of the more detailed of the Ten Commandments. He said, look, you're supposed to have a day off. You're supposed to have a holy day. It's set apart. It's blessed. But also, your family is as well. So you've got to make sure that your family have a good day off, that they rest too. Also, if you have employees, then make sure they have a day of rest as well. Make sure they have Sabbath too. Even if you've got some livestock, they could probably do some time off. Now, we think that's a bit weird. You think, why does the cat need a day off? Well, actually, these people would have been working the land. They would have been working their animals very hard. Actually, you think about it, well, maybe our industry needs a day off as well. And he even talks about people who were just on their land, the poor sojourners that were on their land. He says, look, even they need a day off. Really, you and everyone and everything that relies on you needs time. It needs to recover. You need some restoration. God built into creation that there is a day for us to be restored. It is a process that we go through every week. We work hard, we have a day of rest. Part of who we are is resting and helping other people to rest as well. That is how the universe is meant to work. We are called in this to live by God's time, not our time. Actually, we are to build our lives around what God says is the way to live. So it's a very important thing. And also for the Pharisees and the people of Israel at the time, it was a part of who they were that was different from the rest of the world. Actually, to say we take a Sabbath day and we take it seriously says I'm very different to the rest of the world. We as a people are very different. We are set apart. We are holy. So Sabbath is a big statement. So this gives a bit of colour to the story. Okay, this helps us to understand what was going on in the mind of the Pharisees, what Jesus was thinking about as he goes up against them. And what we see is these these Pharisees use God's plan to restore us. So even in that 10th commandment, it says, well, we are supposed to have time. It's holy and blessed. We're supposed to help other people have time of rest and restoration as well, to come back to God, to have a holy day. They use this very special, very powerful thing to attack Jesus. So they take something that's good for people and use it as a religious weapon. They weaponize their faith. So then Jesus encounters them, and let's work our way through what happens here. So in those first couple of verses, 23 and 24, we find that the disciples somehow have broken Sabbath law. They've been accused of eating grain from the field. Okay, now we might think, wow, this is so ridiculous. They've picked a bit of grain and they are eating it. It's quite outside of our culture. But Jewish law at the time, they had a whole bunch of extra writings written by various people over the probably about 400 years before Jesus. There was kind of extra rules to help you obey the law. And on Sabbath, it's thought that there were 1,500 instructions about how you do Sabbath, okay? Which included the amount of paces you could walk on a Sabbath day. It really did. It was about 900. You walk more than that, that's sin. And also included picking corn from the field to eat. That was how detailed they'd worked it out. Now, the Pharisees, maybe they counted the steps and at that point they hadn't done enough. Whatever it was, they went after them just on this issue. And the clash begins. And we see how faith can either bring life or faith can bring death. And that's what happens here, how their religiosity actually was used to attack. So what we have to remember is this gospel, Mark, we think was probably written by this guy, Mark, obviously, as he was a friend of Peter, and it was written quite probably in Rome and to the churches in Rome. We know that Peter was in Rome, we know that Mark was with him, and we think in some way this is kind of Peter's recollections of what happens for this church in Rome. So when we read these things, we have to remember this was written to a church. Okay, so Mark was saying that you people at this church, this is important. It was written to believers in Jesus who weren't Jewish. So he wants them to understand what's going on in the same way that we're trying to understand what's going on and what the big deal with Sabbath is. But he wants them to think, okay, what sort of faith do you have? In this story, who do you have sympathy with? Who do you see yourself being a bit like? Is it like the Pharisees? Or is it like Jesus? What sort of faith do you have? So what sort of faith did the Pharisees have? Well, they're an interesting group, actually. They're a fascinating group in the society at the time. They didn't actually hold a legal position as such. They didn't hold a position in the temple. They weren't necessarily priests, the Pharisees, although I suppose you could be a priest and a Pharisee. They weren't like the scribes who held some sort of position in law as well. They were a bit like a pressure group. They were part of the religious elite. So they saw themselves as the moral guardians of the way that they read the law. Now, there are a number of different groups in their society there at the time who saw themselves as moral guardians for different ways of reading the law, but the Pharisees went at it in a particular way. And the Pharisees are interesting because they were expecting a Messiah. They were expecting the resurrection from the dead. So we often think, oh, the Pharisees are the bad guys. They're the baddies. If this is a cowboy movie, they're wearing the black hats and they'll get shot at the end. That's what happens. But actually, it's a bit more complex than that. They were desperate to preserve Israel as God's chosen people. Desperate to that. They were desperate to preserve holiness because they understood that holiness meant you were set apart for God. They were desperate to preserve these things. But what had happened is they had lost sight of what it was to be a worshipper of God. They had lost sight of what it was to love God. And so in this situation that the story moves on and Jesus defends his disciples. They have said, why are they breaking Sabbath? And Jesus comes to their defense in a very Jesus kind of way. He asked them a question. He says, have you not read? Okay, now let's remember, these Pharisees, they read a lot. They studied a lot. They wrote all of these extra rules, some of them, in order to help people understand the law. These guys really, really knew their stuff. So Jesus is using a little bit of irony to reveal their hearts, a bit of sarcasm actually to show them the truth. It says, have you not read? And you can almost feel them going, yeah, of course I've read. I know these stories of David. And in this story, before David was king, he was on the run from Saul. He was desperate. His men were hungry. He gets into the temple. He feeds his men some of the holy breads that only the priests are meant to eat. That's what happens there. And so in this, Jesus is giving them a big hint. Okay, he says, have you not read? Let me tell you this story. And they have read it. But he's saying, look, this is why I'm a bit like David. Firstly, I will lead my people into God's presence. Okay, I will provide for them. I will look after them. Okay, that's first thing. He will lead people into God's presence. Secondly, he compares himself to David. Because they knew that Israel's Messiah would be a descendant of David. So Jesus is putting himself into that category, which for them, they would have understood this straight away. This would have been really quite getting at them. So Jesus is putting himself into that category. But he's also saying, actually, I'm a better version of David. See, not only does he provide food, which David does for his men were starving, hungry, so he gets food for them. So not only does Jesus do that, but he restores people back to God by bringing them into his presence. And actually, where David is a flawed king, and we worked through a series on David a year or two ago, and every week we'd see how he did something good and how he was also deeply flawed as a human. Well, actually, Jesus is the perfect king. He is the better David. And then thirdly in this, Jesus is saying, look, I bring life. In this food, in allowing them to eat, in helping my disciples to eat, it's symbolic here of the life that Jesus brings. And actually, again, it might be hard for us to understand this if we've never been starving. I don't know about you, but actually, in real terms, I have never been starving. There have been times where I've been hungry and you kind of shout at your mum when you're a kid, Mum, I'm starving. And mum goes, you don't know what it means to be starving. You go, just shut up and give me dinner. But actually, we really have no idea what it is to starve. Actually, one of the brilliant things about fasting is for a moment just to get to grips with the idea of what it is to be actually truly hungry. And then when we eat again, knowing what it is to be provided for. Jesus described himself in John as the bread of life. It's entirely symbolic in that he provides food, and he provides actual food for his people, but it's much deeper. He sustains us. He brings us back to life spiritually as well. And all of these things he gets to the Pharisees in just this one little story about David. And then he moves on, because really what he's explained, what he has taught here on about the Sabbath, is that the Sabbath is about restoration, about coming back to life, not about control and fear. He says in verse 27, Sabbath is for man, not man for Sabbath. Sabbath is a blessing for us to thrive, not a command and an instruction on the things you cannot do. And remember, this is to copy God, to work hard and to rest well. Jesus is saying, look, this is meant for you. This is meant to be good for you. You're not being forced into fit into some rules. That's not what we intend for Sabbath. And actually, it just isn't the main point of what we're talking about this morning. But actually, having a day off every week, looking to work a rhythm of Sabbath into your life, is actually really very important for restoration. Sabbath is meant to fit round us as well. It's meant to work for us. So I know for me, if I get a day off, I like to relax in very particular ways. So I like to have lots of books and newspapers. I like to be off the internet as much as is possible. I like nice food to eat. At a push, I might go for a walk. That's about it. There are other people here who would like to walk for hours and days, and that brings them deep joy. Or some people would like to go marathon training for 2 or 3 hours. And for them, at the end of it, it's brought them life, and that's restoration. For me, that sounds like death. But actually, Sabbath is for man, isn't it? That's what he's saying. Look, you've got to do things which bring you back to life, which bring you into the presence of God, which genuinely restores your soul. That's important. But the Pharisees, they're critiquing external behavior. They're not interested in human flourishing, but box ticking. They're not interested in you coming back to life and being restored. They want you to comply to their rules. That's what they're after. Because simply, their hearts were broken. So let's understand why the Pharisees' hearts were broken. What's going on with them here? And Jesus helps us to do that because the story then goes up a notch. It goes from stealing a bit of grain, which you feel like the Pharisees would have been annoyed about, but eventually walked away from the argument. But actually, the question that we're looking at today hangs over this story as well. What sort of faith do you have? Again, we can see this. Jesus is the bringer of life and freedom. Okay, the Pharisees bringers of restriction, control, and ultimately death, because that's where this story ends. So Jesus enters the synagogue. Now, Mark uses this a few times, that Jesus goes into the synagogue and something happens. And there's just a massive hint in this. Jesus goes to the place of organized religion. Jesus goes to the place where people come together and worship God, and he causes an almighty kerfuffle. He challenges them. And I think when we're in church, we read this, we need to allow this to challenge us as well. We need to think, oh gosh, it was in the synagogue, those crazy people, they got everything wrong. Actually, remember, the people reading this were sat in churches. These were believers in Jesus. So we need to hear the challenge that there is here. So Jesus enters the synagogue, and there is an opportunity for him to bring some life and some restoration. And he goes into the synagogue on a Sabbath as well. So this is a double whammy in the story. Now again, you remember we said that they had written maybe an extra 1,500 Sabbath rules. Well, one of those was about what happens if you encounter someone who's dying. You are allowed to help them not die on the Sabbath, which is nice. So if you find someone who's got a massive leg laceration and they're bleeding out, you can help stop the bleeding on the Sabbath, and that's a good thing. If you find someone who's injured, but they're not going to die that day, you're not allowed to do anything for them. Okay? That was some of the rules here. So Jesus sees this guy with a withered hand, okay? So he had a guy with a deformed hand, and the Pharisees were sat, they were watching and waiting. They knew this guy will have a deformed hand tomorrow. It's no problem. Jesus doesn't need to do anything now. He can obey the Sabbath rules. They watch and they wait. Incidentally, that's what Pharisees do. They do a lot of watching and waiting. Then Jesus moves this man into the center of the room. This guy. Now imagine you just turn up at church. Maybe you have some sort of physical difficulty, deformity, whatever it might be. Jesus turns up, puts you into the center of the room. Imagine your emotions at that point. Embarrassment, mortified. What on earth is going on? Why is Jesus picking on me? Actually, in that society at that time, actually, people would back away from you if you had those conditions. There's a chance he wouldn't even have been able to get into the temple. So this was not a guy who would have been very socially included, shall we say. But Jesus moves him into the center of the room, and the Pharisees were waiting. What were they waiting for? To see if Jesus would heal him. So it's amazing. They actually have faith. Yeah, Jesus will probably heal this guy. And when he does that amazing thing, we're going to get him. Okay, that's your faith journey there. I believe in healing. When it happens, we're going to have Jesus killed. Imagine that being your worldview, waiting for God to do something so you can be upset about it. So Pharisees don't bring life. They bring control, fear, and death. Now, it's easy to critique the Pharisees. Remember, black hat cowboys, they're all baddies. We can boo them like a pantomime. But actually, there is a challenge for us in this. As Mark writes this story, as we look at the actions of Jesus, we're meant to reflect a little bit. And so I think there are 8 ways that you can know if you are a Pharisee. Welcome to Christchurch Manchester. And I've kindly put them up on the screen for you so that we can think about these a little bit. First way to know if you're perhaps struggling with being a Pharisee is you are the guardian of right and wrong. Okay, you know that feeling in your guts. You're like, okay, yeah, you are the guardian of right and wrong. Actually, me and Vicky were having an argument about music this week. When it comes to me and music, I am the guardian of right and wrong. Okay, if your music taste is different to mine, it's because it's wrong, and that's how it works. So there you go, there's a Pharisee issue there for me. Firstly, you're guardian of right and wrong. Second, you are quick to criticize, slow to compliment. So if you're thinking, oh, I need to just help them through with that issue, I just need to confront them about this, they're doing this wrong, I need to help them, you find yourself thinking that a lot, not gosh, I need to encourage them, then there's an issue there. We see the bad, not the goods. One of the cultures we talk about in CCM is wanting to develop a think the best culture. And actually, that's to go up against the spirit of the Pharisees. Actually, we want to see the good in people first and run with that and work with that. Number four, to know you're a Pharisee, people should be like me. I've never struggled with this one. This has never been an issue for me at any point in my life. But that's actually that thing. You know it in yourself. Oh, if they just worship like I worship, if they just did faith like I do faith. Fifthly, we wait for people to fail. We don't hope they succeed. Which is a pretty powerful one. I've known that a few times, actually. I remember one guy saying to me, Tim, you are just waiting for me to screw up. And when you do, you're going to tell me about it. You're not helping me to move forwards. And he was absolutely right. And I had to repent a lot. Sixthly, way of knowing you're a Pharisee. And actually, I think we see all of these in this story. But this one, Jesus was bringing a new teaching. And they were going at it like he was completely wrong. So each new teaching, perhaps each new bit of preaching that you hear, which is different, is coming at things in a different way to you, the way that you would go in at things. If you treat it as being wrong before you find out it's right, if it's guilty until proven innocent, let's say, then actually perhaps that's a sign of being a Pharisee. And seventh, the rules are more important than the reality. And eighthly, finally, the issue is more important than the person. These are ways of knowing perhaps that there's some Pharisee kicking around inside of you. So all of these are issues of our heart, aren't they? And actually, perhaps we work hard to keep them hidden. And perhaps, actually, you've been quite aware of these and work through them in life. But actually, it's the opposite of what Jesus was trying to do. So if we look at what the Pharisees were doing, actually, the spirit of the Pharisee, what does it do? It snuffs out all life. It snuffs out all joy. And it snuffs out all faith, actually. And what's left behind? Well, control. We try and get people to be holy by control or by fear, or we just treat everyone with cynicism and standoffishness. Ultimately, we bring death, we don't bring life. So let's go back to Jesus. So there's this poor guy with a deformed hand, stood in the middle of the room, and he must have felt like, I am in the middle of something I do not understand. He is being stared at. He's being stared at by Jesus, who he would have heard of, who's walked the countryside and healed people and done dramatic things. And he's been stared at by the Pharisees, who he knows are not to be messed with. And Jesus stands the guy in the middle of the room and then asks a question, another question to the Pharisees. He says, is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do harm? To save or to kill? And it's actually a brilliant question, because who's going to go, yeah, doing harm is great on the Sabbath, or trying to kill people, I'm fine with that. Actually, nobody's going to say that. And so the Pharisees, they remain silent. And actually, as Mark tells the story, it's a very clear critique. Jesus is involved. He's doing things. But you remain silent. You do nothing. To watch and critique, actually, you have answered the question by your silence. Are you doing good or harm? Well, you've said nothing, so harm. Are you looking to save life or to kill? You've said nothing. To watch and critique is actually to do harm. They had become complicit in this man's suffering. They were happy for him to keep suffering for a whole other day just to prove their point. Faith for them had become very warped. So one of the commentaries I was reading on this by a guy called James Edwards says, for conniving observers, proper religion is not about the intent of hearts, but about things that can be empirically tested and measured, about questions of theological correctness, about matters of purity, and fulfillment of legal requirements. That's a description there of what the Pharisees were like. More concerned about theological correctness and matters of purity and fulfillment of requirements. Did Jesus want the opposite of that? Did he want an anything go faith? A faith that's blind to people's sin? A faith that looks away and prefers not to confront? A faith that actually doesn't bring freedom to people because it ignores the issues? No, not at all. Actually, he just cared deeply about people. He was deeply compassionate. And he was also quite happy to break the rules if it brought life, if it brought people into the kingdom of God. And so the story ends with the Pharisees saying nothing, remaining silent, not answering Jesus' question. And he looks around to them with anger. This made Jesus angry. And sometimes we can just brush over that. But remember, this is the perfect Son of God who has now stood in the middle of a synagogue next to this guy with a crippled hand, and he was angry. Okay, sorry. And he says to him, right, stretch out your hands. And this poor guy stretches out his hand, and his hand is restored. And the Pharisees went out, having seen a healing, remember, a healing that they actually expected to happen. So remember that. And then held counsel with the Herodians on how to destroy Jesus. And the story ends here with Jesus' compassion and his desire to restore and bring freedom, and ultimately ends with us knowing that that is going to cost him his life. We also see, actually, a bit of a different reaction to this guy who doesn't actually say anything. He's just obedient. We see that this guy's obedience actually brings him right next to Jesus, brings him with his vulnerability and his discomfort. He could have got out of there really quickly. He sees him with his hurt, his pain, and Jesus says, well, stretch out your hands. So Jesus asks him to do something, and then he does it. He actually takes a step of faith. There's a great act of faith there in saying, okay, this is my vulnerability. I put it in front of you, Jesus. Whereas the Pharisees could not own up to any sort of vulnerability. In fact, they would just lay out rules and laws instead, maybe perhaps to protect themselves. So faith in this actually is to stand before Jesus just with who we are, with what we have in our brokenness, and saying, okay, God, I'd really like you to work. So this morning, just we're going to go into worship again. If you want to come forward, pick. But let's just ask ourselves this question. What sort of faith do you have? Do you feel like you can come before Jesus with your vulnerability, perhaps with your brokenness? Or do you feel like actually you want to keep some rules between you and him? When we look at other people's vulnerability, their flaws and failings, do we think, how do we get them to Jesus because Jesus can heal? Or do we think, how can we control them? How can we impose things upon them?